Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Sophie, I am so pleased to say that the sponsor for our first ever podcast episode is Kato Knives, who make exceptional kitchen knives using the sharpest Japanese steel and hand-carved, sustainably sourced wooden handles.
Every knife is made by hand, tested by hand, and wrapped by hand.
Oh.
You can even have your initials engraved into the handles. How nice is that?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So whether you're wanting to upgrade your own kitchen knives or you're searching for a brilliant gift for a foodie friend, then do check out Kato.
And that's not all. The lovely listeners of this podcast can currently claim 15% off their first order. Just enter the promo code HAVING15.
So to claim, you can visit kato.shop. That's Kato, KATTO.shop, and enter the promo code HAVING15. Thank you, Kato Knives, for sponsoring this podcast.
Hello and welcome to I'll Have What She's Having, a food and drink podcast from me, Sophie Wybird.
And me, Hannah Crosby. Every week, Sophie and I sit down to dinner. She makes a dish, I pair a wine, and we put the world to rights. This week, we pair Sophie's crab and fennel tagliatelle with a Rathfinny 2018 Blanc de Blanc.
And we'll be talking about the crippling heat, the toxic men of Love Island, and of course, the Belarus national anthem. Well, how exciting that we're doing this at last.
I know, the first ever episode.
It does feel like it's been quite a long time coming. I feel like we've been talking about this for at least 6 months.
I feel like the idea first planted when you came around here for the first time ever, which would have been like last October, right?
When I was a guest on your podcast. It was the depths of winter last year for sure.
Can I tell you a secret?
Go on.
I was really nervous.
No, you weren't.
I was really
Why?
Nervous. Well, because I kind of like, we'd met, like me and Sophie had met at a party beforehand, like a press party that shall go unnamed. I was having a terrible time out because everyone was so fucking unfriendly. I was sat in the corner, like I was at the school disco and no one wanted to dance with me. And then you just marched right up.
I marched right up. Han was honestly, it looked like she was hiding behind the door. She was ready to go. I think your coat might have been on. You look like you're about to bounce.
Yeah, my coat didn't really come off.
I spotted you and I was like, is that the Hannah Crosby?
Oh, stop it.
I'm going over. I'm going to go introduce myself.
You're so cute. And here we are. Well, we met in the dead of winter and now we are live and direct from the hottest 2 days the Brin's ever had on record.
How have you been holding up at it?
I haven't been holding up very well. Last night I had possibly the worst night's sleep in recent memory.
Same. Cam went down and slept on the sofa. Really? For the first time ever, I was outraged.
Wait, you didn't have an argument?
Didn't have an argument. He was just too hot. He was like, I'm down. I'm going.
We were, I think the thing about the building that I live in is it's like essentially a massive breeze block. And it does like this amazing job of like, I mean, if it's cold, it's great because it kind of like retains the heat from the day.
Yeah.
I walked to the bathroom at night and I kind of got like a little like breeze, like cool breeze crack from the window. I was like, what the fuck? How is it that cold outside but it's still so hot in here? There is a fan that is like ridiculously noisy, but I honestly just can't be arsed. Well, two hottest days on record, two hottest podcast hosts on record. I feel like, I don't know, what are people expecting from this podcast? Because I kind of put like a, put a call out for letters, which we shall be reading later. And some of them are quite personal and intimate.
They are. I'm quite looking forward to delving into those. You guys are trusting us to some quite big problems.
I feel like we're quite, we're coming across as like quite trustworthy people.
I like that. I feel like that's the image we should be projecting.
Exactly. I mean, it is a food and drink podcast, but who knows? It might like evolve into some kind of like...
It's just going to be fully Agony On.
Relationship, Agony On advice.
We'll be throwing the food, the wine out the window as we're going.
Speaking of the food and the wine, I just had my first mouthful of that delicious pasta that you just cooked. Oh my days.
Yeah?
I don't think you've ever cooked for me before.
I don't think I have either. This might be the first thing I've ever made you.
Yeah.
We only ever see each other in kind of...
Event capacities.
Yeah. And never actually in a sitting down and eating capacity.
Yeah. So can you talk us through what we've actually got in front of us?
I can.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I thought this is a perfect kind of dish for the summery day that we have landed on. So we've got basically a really lemony, crabby pasta. I've cooked down fennel really gently in loads of olive oil with garlic, chili, some cherry tomatoes, some white wine. And then we've got loads of crab, dill and lemon in there. Crucially, lots of lemon.
Fuck.
And then, yeah, tagliatelle, some really nice egg tagliatelle.
It's so good.
It's a good summer pasta number.
It is. It's going to be so amazing. I'm going to be slurping up. So, yeah, we haven't really talked about how we're going to do actual eating on this podcast.
We need to do lots of ASMR-y kind of... How's that? That doesn't sound very good, does it?
I don't know, like, because it's quite like, it's not like that much of a... Can you hear that? You probably can't. I was expecting it to be squelchier. So like how we're kind of like doing this pod is I'm kind of like initially picking a wine that I either have on the wine rack or has been kindly sent in, which is the case this time. And I'll get onto that in a little bit. But I kind of like explain the flavor profile, what kind of food, like kind of set the brief. And then Sophie has so perfectly filled the brief today. So the wine that we've got to pair with this, and we wanted something like really crisp, really clean, like kind of like lovely citrus notes to complement the lemon, something that's going to cut through the fattiness of the pasta. So Rathfinny, I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Have you ever had any of their wines before?
I've heard of them. I'm not sure if I've ever had any of their wines.
Well, today is the day.
I'm very excited.
So they make like low intervention, like traditional method, Sussex sparkling wine. Usually they're all aged in the bottle for 2 to 3 years. This is their Blanc de Blanc. Which means that it's 100% Chardonnay. It's also the 2018 vintage, which is pretty special because it is like the best recorded vintage like in recent memory. Like every single winery has made like a 2018 vintage like sparkling wine in England pretty much.
That was a very lovely summer, if I recall.
It was a very lovely summer. It's made some very lovely wines. It's pretty food friendly. I know like a lot of people usually think of like still wines as being like the food pairing wines, but actually sparkling wine is just so perfect. As we'll see. I recently visited Rathfinny. I had a picnic there and it was so fucking gorgeous. I cannot even, like, I was visiting lots of, like, really tiny little wineries and then you just kind of, like come up to these, like, mammoth vineyards and these gorgeous rolling hills.
Ooh.
You can have a little picnic outside under these beautiful red umbrellas. It all feels very kind of like LA, except you're in Sussex. Also, something really cool recently happened where you know how like different kind of like French regions they'll have like, oh yeah, of course you do. You did a WSET. Why do I always forget this?
Oh yeah, disclosure, dear listener. I do food and hand as wine, but I also do have a sneaky WST qualification. This is actually abysmal. I've forgotten most of the stuff that I've learned, but I'm still a big wine enthusiast.
So like you usually kind of have like specific laws or restrictions that kind of like different French wineries and Italian wineries usually have to kind of like subscribe to. Now there has just been, I think it was literally about a month ago, and now we have our very own Sussex PDO.
Oh, so it's like an AOC situation.
It's an AOC situation. PDO, we can be like more guaranteed than ever, like how fucking good Sussex wine is. And also, I think that kind of like coupled with the 2018 vintage kind of means there's never really been a better time to enjoy a glass of this. Do you know what I mean?
I'm very excited. I'm a big fan of all the British sparkling wines and this is not one I've tried before. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
I'm going to try for another ASMR moment and pop the bottle. This could go really well, but it's also been jiggling up and down in a DPD box. So
yeah,
we'll see how well that goes.
Might just spray all over the pasta, all over the microphones.
Okay, so like a Formula One type thing.
Yeah, let's do it. This is a celebration day.
I know. I thought that it'd be really nice to start with a sparkling wine, you know?
Yeah. On other podcasts where they talk about your favourite food and drink and stuff like that.
Yes.
I do think that if you did have to choose one drink to drink all the time, it probably would be a sparkling wine for me. It does go with... Whoa! It goes with everything.
It does go with everything. And it's going to be such a nice wine paired with this. It's also a little bit of a celebration, you know?
Yeah, I feel like seafood, lemony food with sparkling wine is always a good thing, isn't it?
You can't really go wrong. So thank you so much, Rathvini, for sending this over. I feel like a very spoilt princess right now. What are you getting?
Oh, it's got a really lovely mousse on top. Look at that. Cheers, Han.
Cheers, my dears.
What a treat.
I know. Thank you so much for agreeing to let me bully you to come on this podcast. Thank you so much.
I did not have to be bullied. This was a very mutual arrangement.
So what have you been up to this week?
This week, well, we're talking to you from the hottest week in the UK, as Han said earlier. It was 40 degrees yesterday, which is absolutely
unheard of, fucking nuts. Yeah.
But luckily, my lovely housemate, best mate Kate, bought a paddling pool. So we've spent most evenings this week sitting in a paddling pool, glass of wine, little cig in the pool.
Oh.
It feels very continental, except we're somewhere in South East London.
Are you a habitual smoker?
No.
Okay.
I'm a seasonal smoker. I'm an occasionally in the summer smoker.
Oh, okay. Delicious. Understood.
When the vibe is right.
But when you say paddling pool, it sounds like quite a big pool.
I mean, I keep calling it the pool, but it's definitely a paddling pool.
Yeah. Me and Kim are going to go paddling pool.
Yeah, actually, going back to our pool. No, it is very much, you know, three people can sit in it kind of situation. It's perfect for our household. It's a goodie.
Oh, so good.
So yeah, this week's been mostly sweating my ass off, fearing for my life with forest fires in London. I don't really know what I'm going to do. I feel like I need to make... In East London, in... where was it? It was near Dartford. Weddington? So it's called Weddington.
I've never heard of Weddington before.
I hadn't before. I saw it on the news yesterday. It was basically up
in
flames.
That's what's made
up
it famous.
Up in flames.
Fuck. Yeah.
Actually wild. It looked like something from wildfires you see in Australia.
Or
it's
like
freaking
California.
Me out a bit that this is... I think I might have to run away to Scotland or something. Somewhere it's a bit cooler because, to be honest, my Celtic blood is not really built for this climate.
You've got Celtic blood. You know what? If you relocate, you might actually be able to vote in the referendum next year.
That'd be cool. And I'd say, please stay away. We can't bring politics into this. Or maybe we will.
Or maybe we will.
Or maybe we will. You're still able to vote. Are you not?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I am... Listeners, I was born in Edinburgh. I lived there for 5 years, but I think it's like university rules. Like you need to have lived there for 2 years or something before you vote on it.
Oh, nasty.
Which is bullshit, but it does mean I can get a sexy Scottish passport, which
is
pretty cool.
Yes.
It will also mean that when Britain, well, now that Britain has left the EU, if Scotland now leaves the UK...
Then you will be entitled to EU privileges.
I'll be entitled to EU privileges. But also, I'm just thinking about this. You know how, like, on the passport there's a crest? And I was quizzing my boyfriend about this the other day. There's the crest of the lion and the unicorn. Do you know why that is?
No.
Because the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland.
I'd forgotten this. Why is it a unicorn again?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's because it's like a... It's like a traditional Scottish mythical creature, obviously.
I didn't know that the unicorn originated in Scotland.
I think it's
not
very...
that, I mean, that the myth of the unicorn... I know that unicorns don't exist. I would like to clarify.
And also, all unicorns are actually Scottish. They don't exist. But I'm wondering whether when Scotland leaves, it's just going to have to be like a lion. Maybe they'll just like get the dragon to step in.
Yeah, the dragon's just going to have to get a bit bigger.
And the dragon's going to look like, well, that was the second choice though. So he's going to have like a really like disappointed look in his eye.
I realize I haven't properly eaten the food and drank.
Yeah, this is the
thing. This beautiful blanc simultaneously. I'm going to give it a...
How's it pairing?
Oh, that is bloody lovely. I have a mouthful of the pasta with that. Honestly, get in there.
I feel like
it is really... I feel the dill, the lemon, and the butteriness of the Chardonnay is really... It's doing a lot for me right now.
In off menu, they obviously don't eat, so it's fine. But then in like things like Jay Rayner's podcast, where he literally is going out to lunch with someone.
I actually love the eating noises in podcasts, but I'd be intrigued to know you listening at home or your commute or wherever you are, whether you like eating noises, because it's obviously not for everyone. And we might be really pissing you off with our slurping, forks bashing, all that stuff.
Because I've been watching ASMR since I was about 13. Right.
I forget you're an early adopter.
I did it before it was cool. I did it where I was like listening to it when I was revising for my GCSEs and was like, because I was a bit of a loser anyway at school, like let it be known. I don't think I've ever talked about this on a podcast before. I was a massive fucking loser at school. So I was worried that if anyone found out my ASMR habit, they'd be like, oh, it's a sex thing.
Well, that's the thing. I think you were considered a pervert if you were doing ASMR.
I said anyway. I think that's why you're such a loner. As opposed to today.
I feel like when ASMR was first being talked about, it was always associated with being a sex thing.
Yeah.
It's actually just I remember first reading a Guardian article about ASMR and being like, these are things that have been like making my body tingly since I was a child.
So
like,
you get it?
Yeah, I do.
You get, because I got the exact same thing. I always thought it was like an arousal thing.
Same, but then I remember reading about it and being like, there is a legitimate reason for this. I remember distinctly certain people's voices did it.
Mm.
Even at primary school, there was a couple of teachers who would speak and I'd feel my arms going tingly.
Mm.
I found it so relaxing. There you go.
I think, yeah, for me, it was the first time I was in primary school where kind of like you're doing like a test in class and you put your hand up and the teacher comes and like explains it to you very deliberately and very softly. And I just like remember going,
oh, that feels
so
nice.
It feels so good. But now apparently there's this thing like where you can get ASMR immunity. And I got it for a while because I was listening to it so much because I used to use it as a bit of like a stress buster.
Ah, gotcha.
When I was
yeah.
doing my exams and then suddenly like I just didn't feel it anymore. It's like when you watch too much porn, ironically. It just doesn't do anything for you anymore.
How long a break did you have to take before it came back?
To be fair, I take kind of like a few breaks these days. It's pretty difficult to listen to ASMR with a clear conscience when you're kind of like in bed with someone. It feels a little bit weird. I think
just
I actually
in my
did
headphones
it.
Now, babe.
Yeah, I think I actually did it last night. I felt a little bit dirty, even though it was literally just someone kind of like color matching, like... The video I was watching, it was someone making, oh God, this is so lame. It was someone making a sandwich using a wooden kids toy set and they were like making like a wooden sandwich out of like felt kind of tomatoes and like,
yeah.
Sophie's nodding right now like, I'm going to look that up.
That sounds great. I love the sound of that.
Has Mob ever considered doing ASMR?
I think we try and do kind of ASMR style videos where there's just food noises, no music, and they do tend to perform quite well.
Really?
I guess it's not explicitly ASMR, but it's that kind of vibe. Mm. I don't think that cooking noises are as relaxing as people speaking voices or kind of...
Fire is never relaxing.
No, I don't think it is. I think you're... I mean, as I'm sure the poor people of Mornington have learnt this week,
it's yes.
your stress response really kicks in, your fight or flight, and you're like, I don't feel good right now.
Kitchens are full of hot and sharp things.
Oh yeah, God. I really felt for anyone who works in hospitality and restaurant kitchens this week because the beginning of this week must have been hell. I can remember when I worked in restaurants, hiding in the walk-in. You just go, I need to go and find some parsley. And then you just go and sit in the walk-in for 5 minutes.
Didn't you do that anyway this week when you had your pop-up?
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, it was a little...
Blast from the past.
It was a little blast from the past, yeah. I did my first supper club in a restaurant in years and years and years last week, which was so much fun.
When was the last time you did one?
The last one I did one must have been, I think it must have been about 4 years ago. Mm. And it was much smaller. It was for 30 people. This one was for 105 people.
105 is such a specific
number. 105, it was specific. Because it wasn't one sitting. It was more of a, I took over the restaurant menu for an evening. So anyone who came to the restaurant got that menu. And it wasn't when it was 40 degrees, but it was definitely like 32.
It was getting there.
It was getting there. So I was doing a lot of hiding in the walk-in. To be fair.
And you weren't even cooking.
I was, to be fair. So I did the pop-up at Norma in Fitzrovia, which is a lovely Sicilian restaurant. It's so nice. And all the team there were just amazing. They did loads of prep the day before and in the morning. And I came at about 10. And they very kindly put me under the only AC unit in the kitchen, probably because they know that I'm fucking soft and haven't worked in a restaurant for years. So they popped me under there. And I actually didn't even need to hide in the walk-in that much because I was under the AC. But honestly, all those guys at Norma, every part of the kitchen team, the front of house team, did such an excellent job of making that run smoothly.
Yeah, shout out Norma et al.
Love you guys. Mm. You did a supper club last week as well.
I did. It wasn't really like... The funny thing about doing wine is that you're never really kind of like front and center, which I suppose because I get like, if I haven't done one of these things for a while, I get really bad anxiety. So it's quite nice the attention to all be on someone else. So I was doing a thing for Eat Planted, who are kind of like this meat substitute brand. And because they use like pea-based protein, it's fucking bananas. Yeah. I'll cook some for you at some point because it honestly comes apart like it's chicken.
It looks crazy.
It's so good. I like sizzled some up and I put some in like a noodle soup the other day and it was absolutely amazing. It like soaks up flavor really well. But they were doing like a gastronomy, pantstronomy, I think they called it, thing with Gizzy Erskine, who I met for the first time. I'd never met her before. Obviously heard, I think you've worked with her before.
Worked with her before, yeah. Lovely lady.
Shout out Gizzy. And she was kind of like doing like a cookery class. She was doing two meals. And then like for 30 seconds in between her cookery classes for like an hour and a half, I said, "Hi, I'm Hannah, here's a wine." But I think the interesting thing is you usually like pair wines to... with tannins to break down proteins in meat and break down like the sinew and muscly bit. So when something is like a meat substitute, how do you pair a wine with it?
Yeah, I guess it's more about kind of the base flavor profiles than it is about anything else.
Yeah, no, that was really
But what
good.
Kind of spiced food was Gizzy doing? Was she really kind of...
So there were two dishes. One of them was absolutely fucking bananas. It was like a mock duck. And how she managed to get this... It was like the same meat. It was like the same meat substitute. Like it was like the kind of like classic thing. One of them was duck, one of them was chicken. And somehow she managed to get the duck to taste like duck and the chicken to taste like chicken. It was fucking bananas.
Very clever. I've done a fake duck thing before.
Yeah.
I did a vegan recipe for Mob where it was crispy duck pancakes, except it was just oyster mushrooms, the king oyster ones that you tear into shreds. And then you fry them coated in five spice and corn flour. And then you toss them in a bit of hoisin sauce. And... it is uncanny how much like crispy duck they taste. It's wild.
It's all in the seasoning though, because I suppose you kind of like have those things in the back. Because like, when I think hoisin sauce, I don't really think of anything else.
Yeah, exactly. That is the association.
Yeah.
Also, duck's fatty. Like you need to inject fat into it. Mm. So deep frying a mushroom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the way.
She said like, can't really get like the crispiness of this product. So we're going to try and get like the fattiness of the duck. So it was a Thai duck and watermelon salad.
Oh, delicious.
Really good. And I paired it with a Pinot Noir by Claire Nardin, who I really fucking love at the moment.
I feel like Thai food could be
quite... a bottle in the corner, which is so good.
Go on, get it. Show me.
Well, I'll point there. The microphone's in the way. I'll point. You can see it. It says La Plante.
La Plante is
Burgundian for like young vine. Like all the vines are super young. But it's got like this super juicy, crunchy summer berry character, which is amazing and pairs well with watermelon, but also like this smoky top note. I was like, okay, if something's going to be mock duck, it's going to have a bit of smoke.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's going to have like a little bit of like je ne sais quoi spice in there. So yeah, that was the first dish. And then the second dish was these amazing chicken tacos, which I actually recreated yesterday with actual real life chicken. I'm sorry, Eat Planted, if you're listening. I recreated it with actual chicken. It was so fucking good. Like you kind of like... braise this chicken, so you kind of got like this gooey taco sauce, and then you blacken some pineapple slices, chop avocado into chunks, and then that's kind of like your little limey pineapple-y.
So good.
And I paired that with a aligoté, which I actually no, it's not an aligoté, it is a chardonnay that I cannot get enough of right now from Domingoiso. And everyone who follows me on Instagram will be sick to death of Domingoiso, but I'm not yet, so you can have to wait up.
Wine pairings with spicy food can be pretty hard. I feel like if I'm having spicy food, I naturally gravitate towards having a beer.
Yeah.
I feel like lots of people just don't know which wines to go for in that scenario.
Well, the thing is like spicy food, if you are kind of having like quite a dry wine, it can make the dry wine taste like fucking like arid.
It gets so fucking dry. Like, it becomes like vinegar.
Like you want something with like, I was lucky in the sense that like those two dishes weren't like super spicy. It was more kind of just like a flavor bomb kind of like spices that weren't hot. If you have something
exactly.
that's like hot, then you can only really go for things with a bit of residual sugar. So that you're Riesling.
Yeah, you're sweet boys.
Yeah, you're sweet boys. You're like sweet Alsatian wines. I feel like it would have been really boring if I just came up with two
Rieslings.
I
never say Alsatian. I always say Alsace.
Alsace.
It's me. I feel like I want to get some Alsace merch.
Oh, this one is so nice. Exactly.
It's so nice.
There's currently...
I'm glugging it. This isn't what you're supposed to do with a nice Blanc de Blanc, but
no, I'm still glugging it. It's fine. We have all the windows closed because there is currently a child's birthday party happening outside. I mean, great for them, I suppose. You're only turned 3 once, but fuck.
I was getting really nostalgic about my favourite birthday party ever the other day, talking to my boyfriend. There was a place called TJ's Mini Gym in Crystal Palace.
Of course there was.
It was the best place ever. It was basically a soft play centre where there was a pirate ship where you sat to eat your little cheese on sticks and sandwiches and cocktail sausages after you'd been in the soft play. Mm. And it was the most iconic childhood party location of the 90s.
Oh my God.
If you grew up in South London in the 90s, you know
TJ's.
Went to TJ's Mini Gym. There was also a karaoke place opposite TJ's Mini Gym.
Stop.
Which was, there was a doorway in the middle of, it's in Crystal Palace Park. There's just a doorway on a piece of concrete and you go down a flight of stairs and it took you into a karaoke club. And people had karaoke parties when
I was nine.
I tried to go down there the other day and it's nothing. It's just got like squatters living in there and stuff.
R.I.P. TJ's.
Gutted. Yeah, bring back TJ's and the karaoke party. My 30th is, I mean, it's not that fast approaching. I'm a year and a half off my 30th. Yeah. If I could do a TJ's Mini Gym B2B karaoke party.
Maybe you should make it happen. Maybe you should recreate it in your house.
I'll do a GoFundMe. A nice GoFundMe for my 30th.
And you've turned 30 and you suddenly own this soft play centre.
I'll get you some of it.
An adult soft play centre.
There aren't enough adult soft play centres. Although, as an adult, does it lose some of its joy?
Also, the phrase adult soft play centre
sounds
a little
quite
bit
sexy,
weird.
Doesn't it? I feel like it doesn't have quite the kind of the childish innocence of what the soft play actually is, which is snot everywhere.
Yeah. So we went to a restaurant on our second day, and for our third day, he's taking me to an adult soft play centre.
Yeah, it's fucking raunchy.
Yeah.
There must be an adult soft play somewhere.
I feel like that's a Ruben Berghain.
It must be.
Yeah.
Oh my God, have you played this game, speaking of Berghain?
Yeah, no.
We became obsessed with it at work. It's like a how to get into Berghain simulator where I'm going to send this to you.
Please.
It's so good. It's this website where it maps your face and your voice and it simulates you walking up to Berghain and talking to the bouncer, Sven, and Sven asks you three questions and you have to... Basically, I cannot do it. I've tried about 15 times and I can't get in.
Kate, who got in?
I don't know anyone who's got in apart from my best mate, Kate. Her friend from work got in twice and no one else has been able to get in.
Did anyone Saskia's from your work get in?
No, none of us. We kept going into meeting rooms to try and see if anyone could get into Berghain.
none of us could.
I'm going to try again tonight. I'm going to get my serious face on.
Yeah, if you want us to do this that game live as a bonus episode, it's just going to be like 2 hours of me and Sophie just kind of like trying to get into. What kind of questions was it?
They ask, have you been here before? Have you taken any drugs? Who's your favourite DJ playing tonight?
Is that what they ask?
There's loads of questions that they ask. There's a couple that I can remember. But it's like, do you play it cool and not laugh and just try and be... the most serious person you can, or do you be yourself and see if you can get in
crying.
Anyway? Burst into tears. I haven't tried that yet. Actually.
Maybe you should try.
When I'm next feeling a bit tearful, I'll give it a go.
Please let me in, Sven.
I feel like we should get some show notes and we can link all the stuff that we talk about.
Yeah,
within
I feel
it,
like we should.
I'll get the Berghain simulator in there. You guys can all have a go.
That'll be amazing. I'm wondering because we do have like a sheet where we kind of note down conversation topics just in case we kind of freeze up, which we're obviously not now. I think we've touched on about one of the 12 conversation topics that we were meant to talk about. We've got a Tory leadership contest.
Oh, fuck.
Which I feel
hell.
Like is a bit of an obvious one.
Well, it's just down to two as of today.
About 2 hours ago.
We've got fucking Dishy and fucking Liz.
Yeah.
A bad selection.
I was about to call one of them Thatcher 2.0, but I was like, no, wait, that's
which
both
one?
Of them.
Which both one? Of them. I mean, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, really, aren't we, right now?
It's going to be Rishi.
It's going to be Rishi for sure. And I don't think that's going to be a more positive experience than our Bojo experience. So.
No.
So cheers to all of us.
I saw a great tweet. Well, I say great. By great, I mean totally disheartening and terrifying.
Hannah is a pro tweeter and meme sharer, just so everyone knows.
You know what?
You find all the good ones.
I don't have a Twitter.
Well, you find all the good tweets somewhere on the internet.
I find the tweets on Instagram.
Perfect.
There was a really sad and disheartening tweet saying we're going to go from someone who is... stupid and evil to strategic and evil.
Yeah, that's the thing. Also, I don't think Rishi's a compulsive liar, but I don't think he'd ever get caught.
Yeah. Also, just to note, this is not a Tory safe space. This podcast is not a Tory safe space.
I don't want to see any negative reviews if you vote that way.
If you're a Tory sympathiser, this podcast is not for you. We want you to feel, if you want to listen, we want you to feel uncomfortable.
Speaking of feeling uncomfortable, I know that you have very different taste in TV to me.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, what's your taste in TV? Tell the listener.
My taste in TV. So I like my fair bit of trash. I like kind of documentaries about cults. I also really, really like my favourite genre, and many of the people closer to me can attest to this, very funny but incredibly sad British TV shows, preferably on Channel 4.
Yes,
so
yes.
Like Detectorists, Flowers, Mum is one of my favourite things. They're all like ridiculously good. I really love them. Utopia, one of my favourites.
Utopia was so good. Utopia was one of my... Did you guys all watch Utopia?
Is that something that... Because sometimes I talk to people about it and I feel like it's something that just happened to me. But honestly, the first episode I watched, I will have been about 14. This is giving my age away ever so slightly. But I remember watching it and just being like, this is unlike any script. I don't know, because one thing that I say will tie together all of the TV shows I like is that I hate having things explained to me. I hate like thinking like... Oh, I know where this is going to go. I'm really smart. Like, I know where this story is going to go. I love being like surprised and being like outsmarted by a TV show. Utopia was like that. It was like unlike any script I'd ever heard. The music was unlike anything ever.
The music was so eerie.
This was like, Utopia was the blueprint for a lot of Black Mirror episodes 100%. And kind of things that have been since. Watch Utopia if you're a Black Mirror fan, because this is pre that and it's fucking insane.
If you want the general plot of Utopia to whet your appetite, it's basically about, I'm trying to even think about the best way to describe it without being a major buzzkill. It's about a comic book, which basically talks about a government conspiracy to basically kill a bunch of the population to deal with issues of kind of overpopulation around the world, and about a group of people who come together and discover this comic.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's just like, honestly, a masterclass in tension. I just remember watching that thinking like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
I genuinely can't remember the last time I was so on the edge of my seat.
And
like,
it got cancelled after two seasons, which was a travesty.
Did you see the American remake?
No.
It's so bad.
It always is. It's they so need to bad. Stop doing this.
Because they're like, they don't recreate it scene for scene, which is fine, because sometimes it can be a bit naff if you recreate something scene for scene. But like, they just recreate it in such like a bad way, because obviously they're at Comic-Con. And like, it's just like, my eyes roll back into my head so hard. I'm just like, ugh. It's so fucking annoying.
They did that with Skins as well, didn't they? They lose all the nuance for it being like quite rooted in British society.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes quite a cringy thing where all the charm is taken out of it.
Yeah. Yep, that's me. I bet you're wondering how I got in this situation, which is pretty much every American remake.
The US Office, though, I'll give it to them. That's fucking funny. But to be fair, I'm not the biggest Ricky Gervais fan. So.
I'm the biggest Ricky Gervais fan.
Yes!
I've never seen the UK Office. Shout out James Acaster for slagging off Ricky Gervais, well, indirectly slagging him off in his latest comedy special. But I was kind of, even though I kind of like saw an episode of The Office, I was like, I don't find Ricky Gervais that funny. Sorry, Ricky Gervais, if we ever meet, but I don't find you that funny. And then my boyfriend said, oh, you should watch The US Office. I was like, oh, the UK Office wasn't that good. I highly doubt that the US Office is going to be. And let me tell you why, babe.
It's so fucking funny.
I cried so hard. Oh my God, it was so well written. It was so nice. And like, one thing that I really find with like a lot of American TV shows is that it's that thing that's like, come back to that same thing that I don't really like. Like, I hate things being like unsubtle and having to be explained to me. I kind of like very subtle, like British TV. But like, some of those scenes are so well done and so poignant. And I was just weeping. I was like, oh, this
They're
is
so,
so
good.
Good.
So good. That's an excellent evaluation of all your TV loves.
What about you?
I'm purely into trash right now. I go through phases, but right now I mostly want to watch incredibly escapist reality TV. I got really into Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I got very into the new Kardashians.
Okay.
Made in Chelsea, I started watching again after.
I used to watch that.
I did about 10 years ago. No, a bit less than that, maybe like 8 years ago. I started watching it when I was still at uni. And then at some point in lockdown, we started watching it again. And I was just living for the drama of all of it.
No, I really like Made in Chelsea.
It's got really good again. The other one, which is, this one is actually quite, is it lame? No one watches it. It's an ITV2 reality show called, well, it was called The Mummy Diaries, with Sam and Billy Fares, who were both on The Only Way is Essex. And I don't know many other people who watch this apart from my household. We're obsessed with it. It's one of those TV shows which is so mundane that it just warms your soul. It's what we watch on like a Saturday morning when we're a bit hungover. Mm. You make a sausage sandwich, you have a cup of tea, you sit down on the sofa and you watch these like two quite normal families just going about their life. It's just like, in today's episode, they're going horse riding, and then a whole season will build up to like somebody's birthday party. It's wild. It's the best TV ever. In this vein though, what I'm watching at the moment, which is fucking rolled me up so much, is Love Island, because it's summer.
Okay, so I want to talk to you about this because I haven't watched Love Island since the Chris and Kem era. That's the last series I watched religiously.
You're a wise woman.
Yeah, to like quit while I was ahead. I was like, honestly, this can't get any better. It cannot get any better than two white boys freestyle rapping.
Rita, it
with
didn't.
No one else around. Nothing can get better than this. And as far as I'm concerned, it didn't. But
no, it hasn't.
This season is so bad and the people are so deplorable, it's kind of good.
I thought it was good telly for a bit, but this week I think I've reached the end of my tether with it. On Love Island, there's basically this group of men who are all the men in Love Island, seemingly. Mm-hmm. None of them are good guys. They all behave as though they're 14-year-old boys at school, is the only way I can describe it. They're all bullies. They're bullying each other. They're openly slagging off the girls all the time to their faces behind their backs, to the point where it is just bullying. They're all getting with people behind people they're coupled up with backs, and then really gaslighting them about the appropriateness of that.
I saw the lick the tit bit.
I mean,
or whatever.
I licked a tit or whatever,
which is
iconic.
The key message.
I mean, bizarrely, that couple might actually win it because the other men are so deplorable. Mm. Andrew is arguably the least bad of the bunch.
But that's what dating's like when you're a certain age.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You're dating someone, you're like, oh, he's kind of a terrible person, but at least he's not like so-and-so who did this. And you're like, actually, they're still a pretty... You kind of look back, you're like, how the fuck was I dating that person?
Honestly, I'm watching Love Island, and it's making me think back to all the really fucking nasty guys back at school, guys who were in your class or guys that you fancied, and thinking that was normal behaviour from people that you fancied. And now looking back on it as an adult who is in a pretty...
terrific relationship.
Is in a good relationship, who like, we know each other's worth and treat each other nicely. And these guys are just so horrible to the women. I can't believe it. Women's Aid have put out a statement again about the way that the men have been treating the women. And do you know what's even weirder? Was Adam Collard in the season that you still watched?
No. But is he the guy that came back?
He's the guy that came back.
The first time he was on was the last time that like Women's Aid said something.
Exactly. This is what I don't quite get about the whole thing, is that Women's Aid put out a statement about this guy 3 years ago when he was a contestant, about that it's when the word gaslighting really came into the public sphere. Because he was really gaslighting all his partners on the show. Mm-hmm. And Women's Aid put out a statement, he went out, we thought that was the end of it. He's now come back this season about 3-4 years later, and it looks like he actually might win.
Fuck.
He's coupled up with someone immediately. And you just think, why have you brought in someone who a domestic violence charity has literally had to put out a statement about? It shows a real lack of care towards the female contestants on the show. And I'm not sure I want to watch it anymore because it's making me feel a bit
icky. There was a really good, I don't know if you saw Reggie Yates's directorial and writing debut.
I haven't watched it yet.
Make Me Famous.
I'm desperate.
I cried. This is going to be a developing theme on the podcast, just me crying at everything. Honestly, it is so good. It's kind of like, for people who haven't seen it, it's centered around like the Love Island experience. Like, it isn't saying that it's Love Island, but essentially like it kind of like I think it's like a feature length, like kind of like TV, like special. And it starts with like this guy's interview from going on like a Love Island-esque show. And then it kind of starts with when he leaves. So you never actually see him on the show. You just either see him in his interview, which is kind of spliced in, but then you kind of see him at the start of him exiting the show. So it's so fucking
just
depressing.
Just the aftermath of the journey.
Like the breakdown of his relationship with the girl that you kind of like coupled up with on the show. He'll be having like a mental, like booze and drugs hell. Like he'll be having a mental breakdown, be so depressed, be suicidal. And then an alarm will go off on his phone. He'll like turn on Instagram and be like, hey guys, it's me again. Remember to like drink your protein shakes and use my code. Da, 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 da.
Jesus.
It is harrowing. It is so harrowing, but it is so wonderfully done. Like, props to Reggie Yates. Like, it's a very nice kind of like first debut.
I absolutely have to watch this.
You do need to watch it.
That sounds great. I feel like when both of our jobs hinge to some degree on social media, it's kind of important to check in and watch stuff like that.
Yeah. No, that's so true. That's so true. I mean, I don't know if I would ever advertise protein shakes because...
Oh, no, absolutely not.
I'm not interested in bulking up any more than I already have.
I just want to eat a bowl of pasta and chill, to be honest.
Speaking of bulking up, I went for my first ever PT session last week.
How was it?
It was actually really nice. You know, I had lovely Adam recommended to me, kind of works around the London Fields, Broadway Market area, obviously, because I'm an East London girl. I had him recommended to me as kind of like a nice, non-problematic male PT. I was like, how unproblematic can he really be? As a man, how unproblematic can you really be? And let me tell you, he's very unproblematic. He's such a sweet boy. He's really nice. He like gave me a double high five anytime like I did anything. Like I took a glug of water and he gave me a high five. He
didn't actually.
But like, I was just like, oh, stop praising me for doing the bare minimum. Stop being so lovely. But it was really good. I'm actually going to get back next week. You know, I've got a little bit of a bug.
How often are you going to see him?
Once a week.
Love that.
Do you want to come?
I feel like I do need to come, to be honest. I have a very love-hate relationship with the gym.
I hate the gym.
I basically go like once every 2 weeks for a couple of months and then I don't go. Yeah. And I just eat all the time. I'll go one of these days.
I respond, so I hate the gym. I get there and then there's like, I'll be like starting on the treadmill. I'll be like 5 minutes in. I'm like, yeah, this is good. I'm in the gym. I'm burning calories. I've burned 2 calories so far. And then a little voice in my head will be like, Hannah, why are you doing this? Are you doing this so that you look nice? People who actually love you already think you look nice.
Like, I'm a feminist, okay? I don't need my body to be
You're getting bored, Hannah. Isn't your friend around the corner? Didn't your friend invite you for a pint 10 minutes ago, Hannah? And then I'll just like get off, like not make eye contact then with anyone, just leave.
Run.
But the reason that I decided to do a PT is because I respond very, very well. Being an eldest child and being a fucking do-gooder in school, I respond incredibly well to the idea of letting someone down.
Ooh, yes.
So if lovely, lovely Adam is on my WhatsApp saying, hey man, can't wait to see you later, I'll be like, oh, I can't let lovely Adam down. So I go. And then because he's so lovely, I want to like keep going and like not disappointing him. And what? Because like I get the sense that he wants me to do well for myself.
It's so, the gold star thing. We've talked about this before.
The gold star.
We both need people to give us gold stars all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what is a product of so many things.
It's a product of many things.
But I just always need people to give me a gold star at the end of any task.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm a good girl.
Yeah. I need...
Pat my head and someone, say you're a good girl.
I need someone to tell me I'm a good girl. I need someone to give me a gold star. I think it's kind of, it is definitely kind of like a, obviously, disclosure, my parents are absolutely amazing parents. Shout out Brian, Nikki. But it's like that eldest child thing where you're kind of like, oh, there are these two younger, cuter siblings who have got all their attention. It's just like, I'm going to overachieve and everything, give me a gold star.
Do you know what? I think it's the same thing with me. Disclosure, mum and dad, you're the best. But I've got 4 sisters.
Yeah.
So it's like big family clamouring for... clamouring to be the one who was the star of the show that day.
Yes.
So to be told, you did a good job at that feels really great when you've got 4 other people jumping to be told that at the same time.
It's when you accidentally call Ben daddy that you need to be worried. Really good work on Fresh Mob, Sophie. Thanks, Daddy. Maybe
Hannah
cut
was
that
referring
out.
To-
Actually, I don't know. Will Ben LeBus be?
He probably will listen, to be honest.
Oh, bless him.
I reckon he will. I'd be actually quite offended if he didn't.
Should we keep it in or should
Love
we put it
me,
out?
Love me, daddy.
Speaking of things that sound like LeBus, did you know that the Belarus national anthem is called My Belarusy?
No, it's not. How does it go? What are the lyrics? Can we find out?
Is it kind of just like a cover of WAP, but in like My Belarusy?
Did I ever tell you about the time that me and my sister did a dance off to WAP to see who'd win a family quiz? And
no.
My sister's now husband filmed it and tried to send it to my family chat, but instead sent it to his family chat with all of his parents are farmers from Suffolk and are slightly less like WAP dance off-y than my family are. The full routine, Ellie thrusting, thumping on the floor to her future in-laws.
Oh, that's spicy.
It was really funny.
So My Belarusy actually translates to We Belarusians. Belarusians? We Belarusians are peaceful people, wholeheartedly devoted to our motherland. We are faithful friends growing up, living in a hardworking and independent family. I feel like it loses something in translation.
This, it doesn't feel very WAP to me.
Wet ass Belarusy. Yeah.
I feel like they need to shape up these lyrics a bit in the wake of WAP and just kind of...
Yes. Glory to the blessed name of our land. Glory to the brotherly union of peoples. Our dearly beloved motherland, may you live long and prosper. May you live long and prosper, comma, Belarus. Perfect. Ask for a car while you ride that dick.
I feel like that needed to be sexier to be called My Belarusy or whatever it was called.
I'm wondering if I've got anything else to talk about. I feel like we've done pretty well. Bennifer.
Oh my God. Yeah, this is one of my favourite news stories of the week. I mean, I feel like it's just a silver lining story that the world needs right now in the wake of forest fires in London, etc.
It's like when the BBC do like all the doom and gloom things and like, and now for something a little bit funnier.
Exactly. How nice that Ben Affleck and Jennifer, I was about to say Jennifer Aniston, that would have been the other
That
Jen.
Would have been the curveball.
Like, woo.
Yeah.
And J-Lo, mm-hmm. Ben Affleck and J-Lo have reunited after 20 years after their first engagement, and they just got married in Vegas.
So
I think that's
sweet.
Fucking lovely.
It's so sweet.
I'm not sure. I mean, J-Lo is obviously an icon. She's an incredibly beautiful, talented woman.
Yes.
I feel like Ben Affleck's a bit of a sack.
I feel like it's not very hard to marry and fall in love with J-Lo.
Yeah, and I just wonder what Ben Affleck's bringing to the table here. But I'm hoping that it's more than just nostalgia for their relationship when they were in their, you know, 20s, 30s. Mm.
Because it's brought up a lot of interesting discourse because now a lot of people are like, oh, maybe I should give my ex another go. Like, it's brought up something really interesting. And then, like, I read, like, oh, like I get all of my, like, psychology stats from Refinery 29.
As you
like
should.
Any good female Londoner. Yeah, Refinery 29 kind of, like, posted this thing about, reasons that you should get back with your ex and reasons that you shouldn't. Because it's kind of now like romanticizing this idea of like finding love after you love the first time. And yeah, but a lot of people might be like, oh, well, they only shagged three of my friends. Maybe I should give it another go.
I am personally of the belief that you should normally leave your ex in the bin where you put them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm just a fucking savage.
Mm. Mm.
Do any of them deserve another chance? A couple of them might do, but I'm happy with my lot, to be honest.
You don't always actually think, speaking of exes, the other day I was listening to Sicko Mode for the first time in a wee while. And there is a line where he says, I might take all my exes and put them all in a group.
Because ooh, yeah.
The idea is that like a lot of his girlfriends he's made off from records he produced.
Hey.
And then he might take all his girlfriends and put them all in a group. And I was like thinking, would all of my exes be a good band?
Who'd play which instrument? For off
this, this is the thing. This is the thing. A few of them have been musicians, a few of them haven't. So I'm going to put out there and say no.
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 I actually think that all my significant exes have some kind of musical ability.
Mm-hmm.
They actually would be a really good band.
Yeah.
There's a band.
Would you listen to
them? No.
What kind of music would they? Would it be like, Sophie, take me back? So I didn't mean it, Sophie.
We've got a bass player slash quite a good singer, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a pianist.
Nice.
Slash kind of electronic producery man. And so my first boyfriend is, he's definitely, he was a bit of an arsehole. I feel like he has the like kind of band lead singer charisma that you would want.
What if they were all kind of like at the ages at which you dated them?
So we've got the age when we broke up maybe, or the age. So we've got a 17-year-old.
Okay.
A 20-year-old.
Okay.
And a 25-year-old.
That which sounds weird, but then you can also remember that LMFAO, so there's the main guy. The other guy is his uncle.
No, yes. You're joking.
No, I'm not joking.
How much older is he?
I don't, okay, right, let me consult.
We need to
consult
old mother
laptop.
I never knew this. That is wild.
Yeah, so I think his name is like Red Foo.
LMFAO, I've not thought about them for a while.
I think they have potentially retired on their millions.
I mean, yeah, you just have to have a party rock anthem and then you're good to go, right?
The last time, when I was in Marseille last month, I heard Party Rock is in the House Tonight. And it was the first time I'd heard it in quite a wee while. Right,
so I feel like it would like bring a fire up in my belly. I'd be ready for it.
So they, as a band, according to their... I read something completely different. They've only been active for 6 years and now they're on a hiatus, so they will be back, guys. Fear not. So Red Foo, Stefan, is 46. The main guy's 46 now, which is bananas to
me. Wait, how old was he when he wrote Party Rock Anthem? Too old.
34.
You know what this means? We can still write a Party Rock Anthem.
When he says Party Rock's in the house today, he actually means in bed.
Everybody just have a good time.
And Sky Blue... was 35. Wait, where did who told me that it was his uncle? Oh yeah, no, so the main guy is the other guy's uncle.
What? That's wild.
I thought it was the other way around because he looked so youthful and he was the one that was dancing.
No, he was just a very lively uncle. I can't imagine forming a band with any of my uncles.
Oh, what the hell? He's the youngest son of Motown Records founder Berry Gordy.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
Why did he make Party Rock Anthem then? It's like many choices.
Sky Blue is the son of Red Foo's half-brother.
Whoa.
So yeah, it is uncle and son, but just not the way around that I thought.
Jesus Christ, my mind has been blown.
Could you start a band with your uncle?
Maybe my dad's twin brother. He's probably my most likely one that I'd start a band with.
Yeah.
Or my mum's big brother, Adam. They'd be my two choices.
Could you sing a song called I'm Sexy and I Know It with them?
Probably not, but I might be able to with my aunt.
Mm.
I feel like my aunt would be down.
Mm.
Aunt Jay. Shout out Aunt Jay.
How's the wine going down?
Absolutely wonderfully.
I feel like we've drunk quite a lot of it. I feel like it's
getting
probably...
Getting overexcited.
I feel like, I think we need to wrap up the conversation part.
Excellent.
And so, very sweetly, I think for what I think is going to be like the first... of many agony aunt things that will probably become a very growing segment. To be fair, I feel like we have talked for a wee while. So we have three letters. We've got...
Excellent.
A short one, a funny, playful one, and a little bit more of a serious one.
Should we do a serious sandwich?
We'll do a serious sandwich, okay. So let's start with this lovely lady who wishes to remain anonymous. So she says, hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hello. I'm going into my fourth year at Edinburgh in September and studying anthropology, which is what me and Sophie both studied. So you couldn't have written into a better pair.
We're ready.
I'm studying anthropology, but I don't feel like I'm academically up to the task in fourth year. For full disclosure, any internationals, Edinburgh has 4-year courses as opposed to 3-year, which is what you have in England. I think lockdown definitely didn't help, and I had previously dealt with stress by just continuing to keep going. I never saw giving up as an option, but a worldwide pause and all of my uni work was just cancelled and wasn't really picked up again until the following September. It's all left me in a bit of a rut and I can't seem to get out of. Oh. I have one more year left, but it's the hardest one. A final few essays for this time is due next week. I managed to get extensions, but it's almost proving impossible. Without wanting to sound arrogant, I don't know if this is necessarily a capability thing, but more of a confidence motivation issue. In my experience, not believing in myself has been crippling in terms of getting things going again, especially since everything else picked up. I feel so out of swing with the rest of the world that's getting going again. I'm sure I'm not the only one. How do you know if dropping out or continuing is the right decision for you? Oh, babes.
God, that's a really hard one.
It is so difficult.
But also it's a thing that lots of us have wrestled with in the past. And I know that you've got some things to say on it, yeah. Hannah, in particular.
I studied anthropology at university for a year. I did English for 1 year. I switched to anthropology and then I did anthropology for a year. And then it turned out that university just wasn't really for me, or perhaps a specific university that I'm at. And this is all taking a very serious turn. I'm like, time to unlock the trauma. No, well, as we say, kind of like eldest child and like high achiever at school, I kind of had like a similar thing to you, lovely listener, where I didn't necessarily feel like it was a capability thing. It was definitely kind of like a motivation and confidence thing. I think perhaps you kind of maybe need to think about where you want to go. For me, I dropped out because I felt like I could get to where I wanted to be without a degree. But it honestly depends where you want to be. If it's like completely crucial to you, like getting where you want to go in the future, then maybe it's just like worth sticking it out for another year and getting a 2-2.
It's so dependent on that, isn't
yeah.
it? I feel like I, within my degree, I just did it for the sake of it.
And so many people do.
Like, I know that my school and so many schools don't really tell you anything else to do. They're just like, go to uni. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I haven't used my degree once since I entered the world of work. I don't think anyone's asked to see my GCSEs, let alone my degree. No one cares. It really depends on what you want to do. There is no shame in not doing it if you don't want to. And mm-hmm. if it's a motivational issue, then it probably means
join the club.
It's just not for you.
Yeah.
I think when you really care about something, you're generally really motivated to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, even at this late stage in your degree, there really is no shame in just saying, I actually don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And there are so many cool creative industries and otherwise that you can pursue
yeah.
that definitely do not require you to have it.
And also everyone and their mum graduates with a degree. Like, the job market is still ridiculously competitive. Also, if you've gone to 3 years at Edinburgh Uni, which, by the way, I got rejected from twice, despite it being my hometown, so I'm jealous. If you're already on your third year, you've already got all the tools. You are already clearly, like, incredibly intelligent to get accepted in the first place. You've got an incredibly academic mind. Those skills aren't going to disappear the second you drop out, should you choose to do that. You're still going to have all of the same skills. It's just about getting that piece of paper.
Now, for sure.
It just depends whether that piece of paper is going to help you to get where you want to be.
Also, the emotional intelligence to recognize the feelings in yourself that you might not want to pursue something anymore.
Mm.
That is going to prove to be so valuable in the workplace,
mm-hmm.
no matter if you finish your degree or not. The fact that you know yourself and that this might not be what you want, that skill is going to be so valuable to
you. That's so brave. I was like, honestly, anonymous, I was so scared about dropping out. I honestly was just like so terrified. I like, now on my CV I say that I've only got a diploma, but I don't think anyone checks anymore. But don't I just, you know what, I just wrote Durham University 2-1, which is what I got in my first year. Now I write 2-1 diploma because the experience that I have, people care about so much more. And it's like, it's honestly a lot of career stuff is right place, right time.
Oh yeah. Just use your tenacity to be in the right place, make it the right time.
Yeah.
Meet the right people.
Yeah.
Get to where you want to go.
I hope that helps, Anonymous. Sending you lots of love. Please send in a follow-up email. Let us know how you get on.
Please. I'd love to know what you decide.
I want to know how the story
and
ends.
And we're here to hang if you need.
Okay. So Alex gets in touch. Hi, Alex. This is one for you, Soph. How Ooh. Do you eat seasonally on a budget? Are supermarkets or local shops the way forward?
Ooh, this is a great question. I think eating seasonally on a budget, lots of it relies on having a really good store cupboard. So I would say in your local supermarket, make sure that you've got an excellent range of store cupboard ingredients, you know, your carbs, your condiments, all the things that you might need as the base of a meal. And then to eat seasonally on a budget, I really just recommend having a well-stocked store cupboard and going to either your local greengrocer or supermarket and just buying a couple of vegetables that are in season every week.
Because I feel like so many people fall into the trap of buying, I'll buy all of this seasonal stuff and then it all goes rotten.
Exactly, exactly. I would much rather, if you have a well-stocked store cupboard, none of that's going to go off. So you're dodging that food waste conundrum. And instead, you're relying on a handful of fresh ingredients that generally don't cost too much, because when you're eating seasonally, you're eating in a much more cheap and sustainable way. And then, basically, I'm going to find an example. So you have a well-stocked store cupboard. You know that you've got some giant couscous in the cupboard. Mm-hmm. You know that you've got some nice vinegar and olive oil and some mustard to make a dressing. You go to the supermarket, it's July, you think, ooh, what am I going to go for today? You get a punnet of tomatoes, some feta and some parsley. Those ingredients are going to cost you probably less than £4. Mm-hmm. And with that, you can make a really plentiful meal that will feed you for several days with some giant couscous, a really nice zingy dressing. The store cupboard is your friend in budget cooking. Mm. I tend to use cans of beans, carbs, all that kind of thing.
Filling stuff.
The filling stuff to bolster the really fresh seasonal stuff. That would be my best tip.
Fabulous. Hope that helps. Sharon gets in touch finally. This one honestly made me laugh. I don't know whether it's meant to be funny or not, so I'm so sorry, Sharon, if I laughed really inappropriately, but it kind of gave me a bit of the giggles. But anyway, hello, ladies. Hello. Really looking forward to the first episode of this podcast from two amazing Insta babes.
Aww. That's nice.
So I have a little dilemma. My fiancé and I have been together for almost 5 years and live together in our own place for just under one. I cook most of the time in our house, as I've been cooking for a really long time and I can do it a lot quicker and more efficiently. He wants to cook dinner sometimes, but either takes too long to do things or gets a bit excited with spices and sauces and goes overboard. He doesn't want help. Full stop. What do I do? Thanks in advance, Sharon. Oh, it's such a fine dance. It's a ballet, isn't it?
I feel like there is so much of me in this, which is the control freak cook who thinks that they can do everything best. Mm. And even if you can, you need to give other people a chance to flex their creativity mm-hmm. and have a go at the cooking once in a while. So you have to fight the demon in you who tells you that you're the best and sit down and let someone else do it. And it normally is bloody delicious. You just have to relax.
Yeah. I've got a really good bit of advice, Sharon. Get him loads of recipe books of things that you really want to eat.
Yes, that's an excellent shout. Have you done this?
No, I haven't done that.
Who does most of the cooking in your house, you or your partner?
I feel like it's a bit of an even split. But before I got with my current partner, I thought I was a really good cook. And then the first time that kind of like I had a meal here, he cooked me like a 24-hour ramen. I was just like, fuck's sake.
I'm an idiot.
I can't cook for shit. So like everything I do is like seems really bland in comparison. But I would say the like, I don't know, depending on which is coming sooner, birthday or Christmas, be like, oh my God, babe, I got you something I think you're really going to like. It's a cookbook. And you know what? It would make me so excited if you cook me any of these meals. I would love you forever. Please.
Cookbook recommendations, Hannah. What are you saying?
Tell you what, we went to a cookbook launch last week.
We did.
Even though we vowed
great.
To not talk to each other before the podcast, so it's still things to say, but somehow we're kind of managing it. And we went to the lovely, 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 my ex-podcast guest, Easter Belfridge. Mezcla is out now on all streaming platform. And it is absolutely insane. The flavour combinations you just wouldn't even think of, but she has thought of because she is amazing.
It is one of the cleverest cookbooks I've ever read. I've read it cover to cover several times since it arrived. I just can't believe that someone's brain works like that and makes things that are that delicious. It is mind-blowing.
That's such a good way of putting it. Also, Easter, a bit of feedback. There are very few photos of you. I was buying... I got a cookbook from you because I wanted to see your sexy face in print, but... guess I have to deal with all these amazing recipes instead. Get Mescla, get Ottolenghi actually.
Yeah, get, I mean, Easter's previous book, Flavour, with Ottolenghi. That was a goodie.
Just get all the Easter shit.
I'm really into The A to Z of Pasta by Rachel Roddy. That's a really lovely book. L. Silcox, Salads Are More Than Just Leaves.
Salads Are More Than Just Leaves,
so good.
Because I think the key with your fiancé, Sharon, is that what I'm hearing is that you want simplicity. You don't want him to go crazy. So if you kind of like get cookbooks where like Easter's and like Elsa's, you just have like really simple, easy to execute recipes that he can follow to a T.
Yes,
and not
that's
go too
the way.
Crazy. Because also I feel like Easter's recipes are so ingenious that you don't really feel like you have like the mental capacity to add any extra panache to them.
Oh, you
so
literally can't.
So you can
can't.
Like be pretty sure that he's going to follow everything by the book.
Ben Lippitt did this the other day. He cooked a recipe from Mescla where he was like, I'm going to do it to a T, even though he's a chef who obviously would put a lot of his own flares on things lots of the time. He said he cooked it to the letter, all the timings, all the temperatures, and said it was flawless. There was nothing he'd add. And if a proper chef says that, that probably means that someone who isn't a proper chef also would not need to add anything. It's great.
Okay, that's... that, I hope that helps, Sharon. And I think that's all we've got time for. I think we've run over massively. But we hope you've enjoyed the first episode. We will be back for many, many, many more. As always, please do send us any other Agni Aunt Q&As, whether that's about food, about wine, about relationship,
any
university
of it. Any
issues.
Of it.
We'll be very happy to offer our unsolicited advice.
And also, if you could be kind enough to leave us a review, like, subscribe, give us a 5 stars, all of the above, that'd be wonderful.
We're eternally grateful for you. The next time that we see you, if you tell us, we'll have no way of checking, but if you tell us that you've rated us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, we will buy you a drink.
And give you a big cuddle.
And a big cuddle. There you go. It's an offer you can't refuse. All right. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com.
Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.